If Bonnie Tyler was singing about cartoons, she probably wouldn't be holding out too long for her hero. But what about the heroines? Hi, you Toonsters, and thanks for checking in for another Toon Totality podcast with me, your host, Andy. First, I just want to say welcome to all the new cartoon fans who followed me on Twitter since last time. It's great to have you all aboard. And if you're just finding me for the first time, then I hope you don't feel awkward for listening to the fourth episode first. Right. So, today I'd like to talk about cartoon heroines, and I don't just mean the superhero types, but female star characters and how they're portrayed in animation. It's said that there aren't too many because there aren't enough women in the animation industry. And it's also said that female audience members can relate to male characters, but males can't relate to female characters. Well, let's see how history plays out. So let's go way back to the year 1932, because in the Fleischer Studios cartoon Annie Rags, we have the final human version of Betty Boop. And I say human version because from 1930 until then, she was actually an anthropomorphic poodle. But while there were many other female cartoon stars prior to Miss Boop, she was a distinct character, and not only did she get her own series, she was granted the title Queen of the Animated Screen. What made her so unique? Well, she was one of the first sex symbols in animation. I mean, that is, she wore short dresses and a garter, she had defined cleavage, and the cartoons had some not always so subtle innuendo. At first, she was a caricature of a Jazz Age flapper. Yeah, I didn't know what that was either, but I looked it up, and I found out that it's a term to describe women in the 1920s who were considered liberal. They smoked, they drank, they drove cars, and OMG, they listened to jazz music. Basically, they scoffed at a lot of the social and sexual norms at the time. Now, in 1934, the socially conservative Catholic-based organization National League of Decency was bent on stopping the, quote, massacre of innocence of youth, and sought the, quote, purification of the cinema. And thus, the Production Code of 1934 was introduced. This was basically a set of guidelines that restricted sexual innuendo in films, and Betty's transformation began. She was aged from 16, she was started dressing a lot more conservatively, she was given a boyfriend and a dog, and the cartoons were really tamed down. As a result, popularity waned, and her last cartoon was released in 1939. Betty is still pretty recognizable today, and occasionally makes some appearances here and there, but mostly she's remembered for her earlier cartoons, but it was announced in 2014 there is an upcoming feature film in the works. So remember, kids, the next time you hear someone say rock and roll is destroying the youth, think of Betty Boop, and reassure them that you're going to start listening to jazz. Ain't I a stinker? Now, the 40s, 50s, and 60s were before my time, so if I'm leaving anybody out, please let me know. But while female comic book characters were popular, I really didn't see any other animated female stars until 1970, when we were introduced to Hanna-Barbera's Saturday morning cartoon, Josie and the Pussycats. The show was based on the Archie comic book characters about an all-girl pop band and their crazy adventures and mysteries. It was a show that was very much like Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? The band was composed of Josie the guitarist, Melody the not-too-bright-but-full-of-heart drummer, and Valerie on the tambourines. Valerie was actually the very first regularly appearing African-American woman in a Saturday morning cartoon show. The main antagonist was also a female, Alexandra, who was always jealous of the trio's fame, even though she didn't actually ever seem to do anything. I'm not sure she was actually in the band or what. After 16 episodes of the series, which ran over the course of about 5 months, a 16-episode spin-off series called Josie and the Pussycats in Outer Space ran for 4 months and ended in December of 1972. 10 years later, Don Bluth would give us The Secret of Nim, based on the book Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. I remember seeing this movie back in third grade, and I was completely blown away. The really short version of the story is about a widow mouse named Mrs. Brisby. They had to change her name because of a possible copyright issue with the Frisbee Corporation. Anyway, she needs to move her family out of their cinder block home, which is located in the farmer's garden, before the plowing season starts up. But her son has pneumonia and is in no condition to be moved. With the advice of her new friends, our humble heroine seeks out the counsel of a group of genetically enhanced, super-intelligent yet very mystical rats, who had escaped from their lab. As the rats are debating morality and their course in the future, they present her with a magical amulet that is said to provide supernatural powers when the wearer shows great courage, and they also agree to help move her home. While there are some power struggles in the rat colony, not all of them have Mrs. Brisby and her kids in their best interest. So during a thunderstorm, the field turns to mud and the cinder block begins to sink, with Mrs. Brisby's children still inside. In a very intense scene, the rats are unable to secure the block and it sinks into the mud. They have to hold back Mrs. Brisby from rushing in and risking herself to save her kids. And that's when the amulet's power kicks in. She's able to telepathically raise the block and save her kids. And in the end, the rat coup is put down. It's an excellent movie with great characters, a deep and engaging story, very moving music, and intense animation. And it reminds us to say thanks to all the selfless mothers out there who do their best to move heaven and earth for their kids. The following year, in 1983, Deke introduced us to their first syndicated cartoon, Inspector Gadget, about a clumsy cyborg detective. But the real hero in the show is always his niece, Penny, and to a lesser extent, their dog, Brain. So Penny is a very intelligent and brave young girl who is a lot wiser than her uncle. She always secretly tags along whenever Gadget is called on a case, and she's usually the one to figure out what the villain, Dr. Claw, is up to. With the help of her dog Brain and this computer-slash-book that kind of resembles a primordial e-reader, she's usually the one to save the day and rescue her uncle from various dangers, all the while he is completely oblivious. So what we end up with is a great heroine who gets absolutely no credit. In 1985, Filmation gave us the female version of He-Man, Masters of the Universe, in the form of She-Ra, Princess of Power. Now, She-Ra is He-Man's twin sister, complete with her own sword and transformation sequence, though the use of violence was usually a last resort. She's strong, she's fast, she's intelligent, and she has the ability to communicate with animals, as she's rebelling against oppressive forces led by men. Now, she was not just some Amazonian warrior. I mean, she readily demonstrated compassion as well. So sure, a large part of the show was about selling toys, but I learned that She-Ra has much more cultural significance, especially to the LGBT community that saw her as an idol. She-Ra's toys were produced by Mattel, and as her show's original run came to an end in 1986, Hasbro got Sunbow Productions and Marvel Productions together to create the My Little Pony TV series. I don't recall seeing the show, but the wiki synopsis says that it's about a place called Ponyland, which is inhabited by all sorts of magical creatures, some of which are friendly and others are out to destroy the ponies. That's cheerful. I do remember the commercials for the toys, though, but they were largely about collecting all the ponies and their playsets so you can comb their hair and things like that. I really hope the show had a lot more depth to it than that, but it does seem to be this continuation of a tradition of the time that cartoons were segregated for their audiences. There were cartoons for girls, like Rainbow Bright, Strawberry Shortcake, and Punky Brewster, for example, and there were cartoons for boys, like G.I. Joe and Transformers. All right, now fast forward to 1989 and the Disney Afternoon's Chippendales Rescue Rangers. Despite the show's almost all-male cast, I had to give it honorable mention because of another mouse character, Gadget Hackwrench. She is my favorite female Disney character of all time because she is so far removed from the classic Disney princesses. I mean, she's a mechanical engineer, an inventor, and a pilot with a very high IQ. And while Chip and Dale are busy competing for her attention, she's either oblivious or just isn't interested. I'd say her character is extremely underappreciated, but it turns out that there is a Russian cult that actually worships her as a goddess. That sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? I mean, I think we all know if any animated character is going to be deified, it's got to be Daffy Duck. I mean, come on, man, seriously. But also from 1989, I have another honorable mention, Lisa Simpson. What a wonderful character. She's brilliant, devoted to achieving her goals, she's very conscious of morality issues, and she also leans heavily to the left for political issues. She's explored less popular religions, and unfortunately, she always ends up being dismissed whenever she tries to be the voice of reason. She also plays the saxophone and enjoys jazz music. Why does that sound familiar? Moving right along, we get to that sweet spot in the animation timeline, the 90s. In 1990, Steven Spielberg and Amblin Entertainment teamed up with Warner Brothers to give us Tiny Toon Adventures. You remember so many of the original Looney Tunes characters were all male, including Tweety, by the way. And if somebody said, name the classic female Looney Tunes characters, how many could you name? There was Granny, there was Witch Hazel, and the black and white cat Penelope that Pepe Le Pew was always stalking. Tiny Toons having derivatives of that cast would change it up. In the very first episode, The Loony Beginning, we find a Warner Brothers animator who has to come up with a new hit cartoon or lose his job. Being influenced by Bugs Bunny, he creates a sickeningly cute little rabbit character that he ends up rejecting right away. Trying again, he comes up with a super macho Rambo-type rabbit, which he again rejects. Splitting the difference, we're introduced to Buster Bunny. And once he's fleshed out a little bit, Buster asks the animator for another rabbit friend that he can interact with. Buster sees the new rabbit character as a female and practically complains, "A girl?" To which she responds, "Welcome to the 90s. Babs is very outgoing and assumes the wilder side of Bugs Bunny's personality. She's a teenager into comedy and impersonations, and she loves to entertain. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that she was not related to her co-host Buster, and the two are given equal importance, even though Plucky Duck is really the star of the show. Yeah, I went there, and you can follow me at PluckyDuck3 on Twitter to find out why. Over on MTV in 1997, 10th Annual Industries produced the Beavis and Butthead spin-off series Daria. The show was a spoof of suburban high school life in the 90s when no one was happy. Our heroine, Daria Morgendorfer, is one of the few characters with an actual working brain on the show, and comments on life as she sees it, that is, for what it really is. The popular series would criticize pop culture and social classes and her dysfunctional school as she made her way to graduation. I didn't have cable television growing up, but I bet if I did and I saw the show, I definitely would have identified being a high schooler myself during the show's run. If you remember Daria and have a GPS, TomTom and Garmin are supposed to have a Daria voice pack available somewhere that's actually licensed, and I think I'm going to see if I can track that one down when I'm done recording. Still on cable over on Cartoon Network, in 1988, Craig McCracken created, wrote, and directed Powerpuff Girls. You might remember Mr. McCracken from such shows as Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and more recently, Wander Over Yonder. Anyway, the idea is that Professor Altonium attempts to create the perfect little girl using sugar, spice, and everything nice. A fourth chemical is accidentally added to the mix, and he ends up with three girls with superpowers. Blossom is the level-headed leader, Bubbles is cute and sensitive, and Buttercup is the more aggressive one and a bit of a tomboy. Together, the three deal with everything from typical child issues to fighting crime and giant monsters. The latest word is that the show is getting a reboot, though the original voice actresses will not be reprising their roles, which makes me a little bit nervous for the show. Unless you've lived in a cave, you probably also heard of Dora the Explorer, the animated Latina girl from Nickelodeon Nick Jr., which started its run in 2000 and is still currently going. This one is for the preschool audiences, though, so I don't have too much to say about it. Dora and her friends teach the kids to read, spell, and solve simple puzzles. She's so popular that the show has been translated into over 30 different languages from around the world. Starting in 2002, you could call her, you could beep her when you wanted to reach her. It's Kim Possible on the Disney Channel. While we've heard the story before, it's an excellent rendition. We have a teenage secret agent crime fighter who also has to deal with the mundane stuff of home, school, and life in general. Kim is a smart and highly competent agent, but she's also very realistic. Her sidekick, Ron Stoppable, provides the comedy relief, along with his pet naked mole rat. The series went on hiatus after 65 episodes, and due to popular demand from some very dedicated fans, a fourth season was created, with which the two would become romantically involved. Again, the acting was excellent, the characters were interesting, the stories were very engaging, and they had a well-balanced mix of action-adventure and everyday life. And that's the sitch. I'm going to throw a little curveball at this point by mentioning Lola Bunny, the basketball-playing Looney Tune introduced in the 1996 movie Space Jam. Lola was a pretty popular character, though she was pretty much eye candy. I mean, she had no background, no real personality, no character development, really. They just needed a love interest for Bugs Bunny. Now, fast forward to 2011, and we have the Looney Tune show on Cartoon Network. I think a lot of Lola fans weren't really keen on the changes made to her character model, if you know what I mean. But there were some major advances to the character herself. I mean, we learned that she's from this wealthy background, and in addition to being pretty, she's also crazy, energetic, talkative, and absent-minded, perhaps just a tad psychotic. The point is, they took a female character who was originally introduced as a bit of a token character, and they fleshed her out, or unfleshed her, as the case may be, I don't know. Anyway, they made her interesting and identifiable and funny. And whether you like the Looney Tunes show or not, you have to admit that having a strong, defined character goes a very long way. I hope Lola will return in the upcoming animated series Wabbit, which is supposed to be coming from Warner Brothers Animation sometime this year. Now up next on the roster is My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic, which has been running since 2010. Coming from Hasbro, it would be hard to argue that the show doesn't, at least in part, have an agenda of selling merchandise, of which there is plenty to choose from. In the opener, the ruler of Equestria, Princess Celestia, sends her student Twilight Sparkle to Ponyville in order to learn about friendship. But Twilight Sparkle is more interested in a prophecy about the appearance of a villain, Nightmare Moon. In order to defeat Nightmare Moon, Twilight teams up with five other ponies to track down the Elements of Harmony, but they end up being destroyed before they can be used. Twilight realizes that she and the other five ponies, her new friends, represent the destroyed elements, and in their showdown, Nightmare Moon is transformed into Princess Luna. The series continues, teaching about the importance of friendship through stories and adventures, as well as dealing with interpersonal issues and friends and family. While the show was meant to target young girls, it picked up a following of not only boys, but middle-aged men as well, the so-called bronies. Out of curiosity, I watched three random episodes, and I thought they were fun and entertaining. I didn't see anything that said, "This show is only for girls and not for boys." And I think that was a shift in thought. I remember stories in the news about boys being bullied because they had My Little Pony backpack. And that is not only terrible, it is heartbreaking. I mean, it's so dumb to say that a boy can't like a show because it's colorful and the main characters are girls. I can only imagine that such bullying stings even more since the show is all about friendship, love, and tolerance. I mean, if there are young males out there listening to this and you like the show, then by all means, go ahead and like the show. There's nothing wrong with that because it's a good show. Now, what about the middle-aged crowd? Well, the show does have jokes aimed at older audience members as well, and it does bring about a sense of nostalgia watching it. Probably more than that, though, the show's positivity, I think, is an escape from the fear and the angst and the negativity in the world, the gender stereotypes. And if you're a brony, let me know, because I think it would be pretty interesting to go deeper into the subject for possibly a future podcast. But in the meantime, the next character I want to mention is Avatar Korra from the 2012 series The Legend of Korra. It's the sequel series to Avatar, The Last Airbender. It would be a little hard to summarize the show due to the level of depth, but I will say that the animation is absolutely beautiful. The stories had me on the edge of my seat, and while it was frustrating having to wait for the next episode to come out, at the same time it was also really fun to try to guess what was going to happen next. So the show stars Avatar Korra, a non-Caucasian female who was born into the role of having to bring balance to the world as the only one who can telekinetically control earth, fire, air, and water. Even when she does save the world really isn't all that appreciative. In fact, they often just end up blaming her for the new troubles introduced when the old ones were resolved. Considering that she risks her life so often, and she sees the lives of her friends constantly in danger as well, it plays a very heavy toll on her, and she ends up developing post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. She tries to run away from the world and herself. I mean, how is that for complexity of a character? I mean, besides exploring themes of mental illness, the show is about the interactions of friends and family, it's about fascism, terrorism, bigotry, and all sorts of extreme ideologies. And it's not just Korra who's the only strong female character either. I mean, far from it. We have Lin Beifong as the chief of police for Republic City. Her sister Sue, who's the leader of the city-state Zaofu. There's Kuvira, the villainous military leader from the fourth season, who starts this coup to take over the Earth Kingdom. Korra's mentor Tenzin has a daughter named Jinora, and there's a whole story arc of her coming of age and becoming an official airbender, earning her tattoo. And then there's Korra's friend Asami, who runs the technology-based corporation Future Industries. Have you seen the series finale? Because if you haven't, spoiler warning. At the end of the series, it's revealed that Korra and Asami actually start a romantic friendship. So the creators weren't afraid to touch on so many relevant topics, and of all the female animated characters I've seen, Korra is way out in front as the most influential, relevant, and important. It's an excellent series and a must-watch, though I do suggest watching Avatar The Last Airbender first. I think it'll make things a little bit easier to follow. And finally, we've already had a sneak preview, but the comedy adventure Star vs. the Forces of Evil is coming to Disney XD on March 30th, and I can tell right away that this one's going to be a hit. Star Butterfly is a magical teenage princess from another dimension. Her parents send her to stay to Earth with the Diaz family while she's hunting monsters using a powerful magic wand that she doesn't quite have full control over yet. From what we've seen so far, Star is very excitable. She's fun-loving and enthusiastic about learning the different customs from her friend Marco Diaz. The humor is great, I love the character design, and the show just looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to watch it. So we've come a long way from token female characters like Smurfette and Boy-Girl segregated animated productions. We've seen the migration from the helpless princesses waiting for their love at first sight prince to save them, to princesses like Merida from Brave and Anna and Elsa from Frozen. We have more female characters who are balanced with the male co-stars, and we have more animated productions with female leads. I'm sure that these trends are going to continue, and I think that is a very good thing. Before I end the show, I'd like to give this episode's Animation Awesomeness Award to Tress McNeil. She provided the voice for Betty Boop in recent commercials. She was the voice of Babs Bunny, not to mention Chip Dale and Gadget Hack Wrench. She was also the voice of Daisy Duck and about a million other characters from many of the shows that I've already talked about. Well, I'm sorry this episode took a lot longer to get out there. Don't forget to follow Toon Totality on Facebook or at Toon Totality on Twitter, and let me know what you think. Until next time, see you later. The younger crowd is like, who's Bonnie Tyler?